CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batser. Jerome Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve, remarks in these last days following the meeting earlier in March, a quarter point raise for the interest rate charged the best customers for the Federal Reserve. This continues the hikes of 2022, not dramatically. And the question is raised, is Mr. Powell in a place where he cannot satisfy anyone? There's a banking crisis of some nature that is ongoing, not only in the United States, but in Europe. Questions raised about too big to fail, not very big, but too big to fail. At the same time, raising interest rates in a banking crisis strikes some as peculiar. There's also the question of the inflation number that the Federal Reserve governor's target is 2%. We're at 6. Got a long way to go, and that would call for more aggressive action. But Mr. Powell indicated there had been a debate between no interest rate rise in the March meeting and a quarter point. However, at the same time, remarks suggesting there will be more ahead. Joe, how to interpret this now triple burden on the Federal Reserve? Not only don't make unemployment too severe, in other words, soft landing, at the same time, fight inflation down to 2% quickly, but and then a banking crisis. Do those all go together? Did Jerome Powell comment on all three simultaneously?
Well, I mean, yes, I think all three of these phenomena do go together because, I mean, what has triggered the problems in a few of these banks over the recent weeks has been the rapid run-up in interest rates over the past year after a period of exceptionally, historically low near zero interest rates for basically a decade beforehand. And so what has happened is what a bunch of people, including myself, were afraid would happen, which is that the Fed thought that the way that it was going to get inflation under control would be that it would increase interest rates and gradually push up the unemployment rate a bit, and that would create slack in the economy that would dampen inflation. Instead, what's likely to happen is that it's going to set off some kind of financial accident or event related to the rapid repricing of assets whose values were wildly inflated by Fed policy over the past decade. And so he, Chairman Powell really found himself walking a tightrope last week because, on the one hand, inflation is not vanquished at all. It is still well above the Fed's 2% target. And yet you are seeing these signs of distress starting to appear in the financial system, which suggests that the Fed might be close to breaking something if it hasn't already done so. And so what was he to do? And I think that their solution was twofold. One, they probably did the right thing by increasing the rate by a quarter point, which signaled that he is still prioritizing the fight against inflation, because I think that one danger that we're going to face here is that he will become so fearful of dealing with the financial stuff that they will start just allowing inflation to run hot permanently. And that would be kind of this weird form of perma stagflation crisis where, you know, the banks would never completely clear out the slough of all of this bad activity they've been doing during the asset price bubble of the past 10 years. And inflation would never really get under control, and economic growth would never really be able to, you know, improve again. And so that would be the worst of all three worlds. So he signaled he's not going to do that. What he was suggesting is that, you know, in a weird way, he might try to retrospectively claim that some of these banking problems were part of the plan all along, because now he's suggesting that some degree of controlled turmoil in the banking system might tighten lending conditions in a way that would help with the inflation fight and amount to a further increase in interest rates that they will not need to do now. So that was kind of a strange argument that he was making. But I think that his bind is that he has to show that he's still serious about inflation, as that we're reaching the point where the anti-inflation policies are going to start having an effect on the financial system.
I asked for a translation of Mr. Powell's response to a question. He was asked, are we wrong to expect rate cuts later this year? In other words, the Fed to reverse itself in the same calendar year. Here's the translation I need. Mr. Powell said, that's not our baseline expectation. What does that mean, Joe?
Well, I think what he is trying to signal is that he remains committed to fighting inflation. And so if you look at what the Fed also did last week is release one of its quarterly state summary of economic projections, these dot plots that you always hear about. And that's where they kind of give their guesses about sort of what they think are plausible scenarios for the future. I wouldn't exactly call them forecasts. They seem to be foreseeing, maybe one more small rate increase in the next meeting or two, and then kind of leaving rates there for a sustained period. And I think that he definitely wants to signal that they are going to maintain that kind of interest rate policy for as long as it takes to get inflation under control. And I think that he probably is wary of encouraging people to think that if they wait, they'll be able to wait out the Fed in terms of some of this repricing of financial assets like stocks and bonds, because it would be good for the economy if we can have sort of a more permanent repricing of some of those so you can get back to allocating capital in a more sensible, productive, pro-growth way. But you're going to end up with this challenge the deeper into this process we get of the market not necessarily believing him and kind of daring him to change his mind. And I suspect that that might become a theme as the year progresses.
That is the talk, Joe, that the markets don't believe him. He says repeatedly the same thing. He's very consistent. We're going to continue to raise the rates in order to return to 2%. Why don't they believe him, Joe? I mean, he said it. I mean, isn't the expression blue because he said it so often, blue in the face?
Well, I think there are two reasons why they don't believe it. One is that they don't want to believe it, because this process of having higher interest rates, even though, bear in mind, on an inflation-adjusted real basis, many interest rates in the economy remain negative, because the inflation remains so high. So the Fed funds rate still is, even after it reaches the top of the range, I think is at about 5% now, is still negative if you have 6% inflation. So that is not a high interest rate by any kind of historical standard. It's just higher than we've had for the past 10 years. And this process is very painful for a lot of market participants, because it means that they really bought during the asset price bubble that the Fed had created. And at some point, they are going to have to realize losses as a lot of these assets reprice themselves in line with what the interest rates are now. So I think that part of this betting against the Fed is that they don't want it to be true. And so they're kind of, they keep making these forecasts in the way that I guess they hope they can kind of bully the Fed into making it not true. But I think the bigger problem here is what this says about Jerome Powell's credibility. I think that there is perhaps an element of the market believing that precisely because this process will be so painful for the economy, political pressure from Congress especially will mount on Chairman Powell not to keep doing it. He'll face a lot of pressure from people like Senator Elizabeth Warren or, even some Republicans on Capitol Hill to just make the pain stop and go back to goosing the economy. And there does seem to be a certain amount of doubt in the markets that Powell will be able to stick to his inflation fighting resolve. I mean, remember what he's done over the past year has been the easy part, where he was raising interest rates and demonstrating resolve without triggering unemployment in the way that the Fed thought that they would. And it's been a year until we started seeing any kind of murmurs in some of the banks. So we're only now getting to the hard part. And that's where the market again is starting to question his resolve.
Leaving the Federal Reserve building, heading to the Treasury, we also had a puzzle last week, Joe, when Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, said on alternate days, supporting deposits, not supporting deposits, supporting deposits. Did this calm the market that there was uncertainty? Because last week there was a lot of head scratching. What is it that she was trying to convey in reversing herself Maybe once or twice. I don't think anything's happened this week.
No, this is totally insane, and an irrational world might even constitute a firing offense, although I don't think she's going anywhere. I mean, this started when the Treasury and FDIC and the Fed schemed and connived in the first weekend when Silicon Valley Bank ran into problems to insure all of its previously uninsured depositors. And that then created an expectation that the government would step in to insure uninsured depositors at other banks as well. And they have developed, you know, the government seems to have developed this notion that they have to make that promise in order to avert a mass run on the banks from uninsured depositors, which ignores the fact that, I mean, those depositors don't have anywhere to go as long as you're saying that you're not going to insure anyone above the statutory limit of $250,000. So what you would actually have would be a flight to perceived quality, which was basically what was happening already when it wasn't that people were fleeing from small banks to too big to fail banks. They were fleeing from small banks that they had reason to believe might run into problems into other banks that they had reason might not run into problems. But then she realized that she didn't have the statutory authority for this. So she spent much of last week kind of vacillating between saying coyly, well, you know, technically we won't, but maybe we will, and then promising Congress that she wouldn't, because of course Congress hadn't given her the authority to do that. And I mean, this is awful. The government has to decide what it's going to do and then stick to that. And this wouldn't have been a problem if they had stuck to the law, which until 3 weeks ago was that you don't get insurance over $250,000. And that's very important market discipline. And now we have both indiscipline and confusion.
There's been reporting, and I haven't seen it on fire today, but over the weekend, of a lot of deposits moving from regional banks to banks too big to fail, or a lot of money coming into lots of banks because people are dividing up their deposits to be within the $250,000 loan. Is that all destabilizing, or is that just business as usual? Because there doesn't seem to be any new bank on fire.
Well, I mean, deposit diversification should be business as usual for any small business or medium-sized company or a large company that has deposits in excess of the $250,000. And in fact, one of the quirks of Silicon Valley Bank was that they had induced so many of their customers to break that best practice and place all of those firms' deposits at Silicon Valley Bank. So, I mean, diversification is a good thing. And we should actually be encouraging it instead of encouraging people to concentrate all of their risks at, you know, one bank because you assume that you'll have the deposit insurance. There was a lot of speculation and concern, and part of the justification for insuring the uninsured depositors at Silicon Valley Bank was this fear that uninsured depositors would flee to too big to fail institutions. I haven't really seen a lot of evidence that that's happening. And you don't see a lot of reports talking to bank executives or market participants that that is what is going on. It's not even clear that some of those banks would want the deposits because, I mean, their big problem throughout the pandemic era had been that they already had too many deposits to know what to do with. So it's been kind of a relief to them to see that reversing itself over the past year. As monetary conditions were tightening a bit. And so I think that it's more likely that what is going on is that you were seeing a diversification of deposits among various small and mid-sized banks, which is healthy. It contributes to resilience in the system. And it also means that you can count on depositors to send you a good market signal because that suggests they were actually pretty discerning and discriminating in terms of pulling out of the banks where you had reason to believe that there might be a problem, but then putting their deposits in the banks where there was good reason to believe that you could be confident in the bank.
Joseph Sternberg is a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's in London. He writes the political economics column, observing banking internationally and the Federal Reserve and the Treasury from the other side of the Atlantic. When we come back, we're going to observe Joe's life in London from this side of the Atlantic because it's springtime and the conditions that were possible during the winter of 23 did not appear. The winter is now declared mild and done with in Northern Europe. So what does that mean for the people of London, Greater London? What does it mean for the government? Did we get lucky? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.